Okay, so I have to be completely honest with you right out of the gate here.
Oh boy. What is it?
Well, when I was getting ready for this deep dive and I clicked to generate an audio overview of the PDF you sent over,
Yeah.
I honestly thought there was some kind of glitch. Or like maybe you had accidentally sent me the track list for some experimental dark ambient noise band. It
You know, it really does have that exact vibe.
really does. I mean, the title is Stochastic Heat Flow is a Black Noise. It
Right.
sounds like something you'd hear blasting in a Berlin basement club at like 3 in the morning.
Exactly. But we are definitely not reviewing music today.
No, we are not. We are looking at a paper published in July 2025 by Yu Gu and Li Chengcai. And from what I can gather, this is just a massive collision between heavy-duty physics and some very, very high-level probability theory.
That is exactly right. And I know the title sounds incredibly abstract or even a little glitchy, as you said, but the mission of this deep dive is actually about understanding the fundamental limits of randomness. We're looking at a mathematical model of how heat spreads, which is standard physics, but doing it in an environment that is completely random. And what Gu and Cai do is they take this model and push it to its absolute breaking point.
And see, this is where it gets really, really interesting for me. Because usually when you have a model, you put inputs in and you get outputs outright. The output depends on the input.
Always. That's the assumption.
Right. But if I'm reading this abstract correctly, they essentially prove that you can build a system entirely out of one type of noise, standard white noise.
Yes.
But when that system reaches its final ultimate form, it completely ghosts the noise that created it.
Ghosts is actually a surprisingly accurate technical term here,
Really?
or at least it captures the spirit of the math perfectly. The paper proves a kind of mathematical paradox where the creature, which is the heat flow, becomes statistically independent of its creator.
The white noise.
Exactly, the white noise.
See, that is the part I really want to drill down into today because intuitively it just sounds impossible.
It does.
It sounds like baking a cake and then finding out the finished cake has absolutely no relationship to the flour you put in the bowl.
Right.
But before we get to the paradox, we have to actually build the machine. We need to explain what stochastic heat flow actually is for everyone listening.
Right. So to understand the destination, we really have to understand the vehicle. And the paper focuses on the 2D stochastic heat equation.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. Heat equation, that's standard stuff, right? Hot pan, cold, room heat spreads out.
Exactly. It's just diffusion. In a standard textbook physics problem, the medium, so like the air or the metal, is smooth and uniform. But in this paper, the medium is stochastic, which just means it's random. So imagine a metal plate where the ability to conduct heat is shifting wildly and randomly at every single tiny point.
So the landscape itself is constantly jittering.
Yes. And the specific source of that jitter is what the authors call space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise. Again, it just sounds like a sci-fi gadget. Like Captain, the space-time noise is fluctuating.
It really does.
But what does that actually mean when we look at the math?
Think of the static on an old television set.
Oh, okay.
That is white noise. It's completely uncorrelated.
Yeah.
If you look at one single pixel of static, it tells you absolutely nothing about the pixel right next to it.
So it's pure randomness.
Pure randomness. It's jagged and rough and completely unpredictable at every single microscopic point.
And that has to be a problem for the math, right? Because you can't really do calculus on a curve that's jumping around infinitely fast.
Precisely. You hit the nail on the head. If you try to plug that raw infinite roughness directly into the heat equation, the math just explodes.
Right.
It becomes ill-defined. So Gu and Cai, and obviously the researchers who came before them, they have to do something called mollification.
Mollified space-time white noise. I just love that phrase. It sounds so polite. Like I have mollified the noise. Please proceed.
It does sound very polite, but practically it's really just a mathematical blur filter.
A blur filter.
Yeah, they introduce a smoothing parameter, which they denote with the Greek letter epsilon.
Epsilon.
Right. And basically, they take that infinitely sharp static and they blur it just enough so that it's smooth, mathematically speaking.
So epsilon is like putting on a pair of blurry glasses.
Exactly. That's a great way to think of it. With the glasses on, the noise is smooth and you can actually solve the equation.
Okay.
You can sit there and watch how the heat flows through this newly blurry landscape. But, and this is the absolute key to the whole paper, the study isn't about the blurry version.
Right, the paper is about what happens when you take the glasses off.
Yes. When you send epsilon to zero,
To zero.
they take the limit as that epsilon approaches zero, letting all that infinite roughness come back in full force. And the result of that specific limit is the stochastic heat flow, or SHF.
Okay, so the SHX isn't the process with the blur.
Yeah.
It's the final object that remains when the blur is completely gone. It's the limit object.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. And you would logically assume that this limit object is just a very, very jagged version of the original static. But the authors prove it actually belongs to a completely different category of probability.
Yeah.
They prove it is a black noise.
Okay, let's pivot to that term right now. Because we know white noise, that's the TV static.
Right.
And I've heard of pink noise. People use it to help them sleep. And I think there's brown noise too. But what on earth is black noise? Is it just silence?
You would definitely think so, given the name. But no, the term actually comes from the work of a brilliant mathematician named Boris Cyrulson back in 2004.
Okay.
And it's a very specific and honestly somewhat spooky concept in probability theory.
Spooky how?
Well, let's go back to white noise for a second. It's random, yes. But it's built out of independent pieces. You can decompose it.
Decompose it. How?
You can isolate it. You can say, here's the frequency at 100 hertz, and here's the frequency at 200 hertz.
Okay.
It has a structure. It has what mathematicians call linear random variables. You can pull individual threads out of the fabric, so to speak.
Okay, so white noise is kind of like a messy pile of Lego bricks. It's a total mess, but I can reach and pick up one brick and say, this right here is a blue 2x4.
Exactly. Perfect analogy. Now, contrast that with the strict mathematical definition of black noise in this paper. They define it entirely by what it lacks.
What does it lack?
A noise is black if the space of its linear random variables, which is denoted as H1, contains only zero.
H1 equals zero. I remember seeing that exact formula in the definition.
That's the one. It fundamentally means there are zero threads. You cannot pull a single linear strand out of the mess.
Wow.
It is a homogeneous, continuous product of probability space that is so incredibly entangled and so dense that traditional stochastic analysis just slides right off it.
So if white noise is a pile of Legos, then black noise is what? Like a melted down plastic slurry?
Or singularity.
A singularity.
Yeah, it's a wall of complexity that has no notes. If you try to listen for a specific tone within it, you just hear nothing. It completely resists being taken apart into simple pieces.
So it's a type of randomness that is essentially structurally sealed.
Sealed is a very good word for it. And Theorem 1.1 of the paper connects these two concepts definitively.
Theorem 1.1.
It basically says this stochastic heat flow we built, the thing that happens when we rip the blurry glasses off,
yeah,
that object is fundamentally a black noise.
Okay. So the heat flow turns into this dense, impenetrable block of randomness. But that actually brings us to the main event here, Corollary 1.2.
Yes.
Because this is the independence paradox we teased earlier.
This is the part that really forces you to question your intuition about how physics works.
Walk us through it, because we started with the white noise. The paper calls it a quest.
Right.
And we used a quest to drive the heat equation. We got a final result called Z. So logically, Z is quite literally made out of a sway.
You would assume the child shares DNA with the parent, right?
Yeah.
But Corollary 1.2 proves that in the limit meaning, as that smoothing epsilon goes to exactly zero, the stochastic heat flow Z and the white noise Z become independent.
Independent. Meaning, mathematically speaking, they have nothing to do with each other.
Statistically independent. If you somehow know absolutely everything about the input white noise, it gives you zero predictive power over the specific fluctuations of the stochastic heat flow in that limit.
I am really struggling to wrap my head around that. How can the result be completely independent of its own ingredient?
It's strange, Ray.
Is it like encryption or something?
That's actually a really helpful analogy. Think about a cryptographic hash function on a computer.
Okay.
You put in a password. Let's say you type in password 123, and the function spits out a huge long string of random characters.
Right. The hash.
If you look only at that output string, it looks like total randomness. It's completely forgotten the input. You can't reverse engineer password 123 from the hash.
Because the information is scrambled.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in this case, the physical process of sending epsilon to zero scrambles the information so effectively that the specific microscopic details of the original white noise just get washed away entirely.
So the black noise isn't just a different flavor of noise. It's actually a severing of ties. It's an information horizon.
Precisely. And the paper even cites a theorem by Himwich and Parekh that basically lays out a rule for this. It says if you have a black noise and a white noise coupled together in a space like this, they must be independent.
Wow.
They are essentially entirely different species of randomness that simply cannot talk to each other.
Now, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Please do.
Because my instinct is to ask, is this just because the system is super sensitive, like the butterfly effect in chaos theory?
That is the very first question every single physicist asks when they see this. Is this just chaos?
Right. Because if I change the white noise, even a tiny, tiny bit, does the heat flow change completely?
Yeah.
Because if it does, then maybe that's why they look independent. It's just too messy to track the changes.
That is a very smart intuition to have. And Gu and Tsai address this head-on in section 4 of the paper. It's called noise sensitivity analysis.
And what do they find?
Well, the answer is subtle. The system is noise sensitive. They prove that.
They actually quantify that sensitivity.
They do. They rigorously show that if you perturb the underlying white noise just a minuscule amount, the resulting heat flow changes dramatically.
Okay.
And they even measure the exact scale of this sensitivity. It happens at the scale of 1 over the absolute value of the log of epsilon.
Okay, so 1 over log epsilon, which means as epsilon gets smaller, as we unblur the image, the system gets increasingly hypersensitive?
Hypersensitive, yes. Huh. And they back this up with some deep Fourier analysis. They look at the energy of the system.
But what happens to the energy?
As you remove the smoothing, the energy doesn't just stay in the low frequencies where we can observe it. They state that the Fourier spectrum escapes to infinity.
Escapes to infinity, so it goes high pitch, like an infinitely high frequency.
Exactly. The information essentially moves to scales so unimaginably fine that they are effectively invisible to standard mathematical observation.
Right.
But, and this is a massive, but Gu and Tsai are incredibly careful to distinguish this sensitivity from actual black noise.
Why? Because honestly, if the spectrum escapes to infinity, isn't that basically the same thing as saying there are no linear variables left to track?
No, it's not. And this is where they bring in a brilliant counterexample in section 1.3 to really hammer their point home.
Okay.
They mathematically construct a completely different variable using Brownian motion.
Brownian motion, so just the standard random jitter of particles in a fluid.
Exactly. Specifically, they look at something called local time, which basically just measures how much time a Brownian path spends at one specific location.
Right.
And they show that you can build a system based on this Brownian local time that is also highly noise sensitive.
Oh, come following.
Its Fourier spectrum also escapes to infinity. It is just as unstable as the heat flow we've been talking about.
I hear a but coming.
But it is not a black noise.
It fails the test.
It completely fails the Cyrilson test. It remains fundamentally dependent on the source noise that created it. You can still technically trace the lineage back to the original randomness.
So simply being chaotic, simply having your energy escape to infinity, is not enough to cut the cord.
Exactly. The Brownian motion counterexample proves that you can absolutely have sensitivity without having independence.
Wow.
But the stochastic heat flow goes that one massive step further. It doesn't just scramble the picture, it throws the photograph into a fire.
That is such a good distinction. So proving it is black noise is a much, much bigger deal than just proving it's chaotic or sensitive.
Spot on. It's a structural break in the information itself.
So we've established what it is and why it's so weird. But I really want to get into the how.
The methodology.
Yeah, because this is a dense paper. I scrolled through it and it's just wall-to-wall Greek letters and complex integrals. How do they actually prove something is a black noise? You can't just look at a formula and say, yep, looks black to me.
No. Definitely not. You need a rigorous mathematical test. And for this, they use a tool called Cyrilson's criterion.
Cyrilson again. He really owns this entire corner of the math world.
He really does. The criterion is basically a test involving conditional expectations.
Okay.
Roughly speaking, imagine you are looking at the continuous process over a very specific time window, say from time S to time T.
Right.
You want to see exactly how much information or variance is contained strictly within that window.
I think I saw a formula for this in the paper. It looked like the variance is much less than T minus S.
Yes, that's the one. The criterion states that as you shrink that time window, the amount of hard linear information you can actually pin down vanishes faster than the window itself shrinks.
So the closer you look, the less you actually see.
In a sense, yes. The linear information just evaporates relative to the timescale you're looking at.
That's wild.
But applying this criterion directly is an absolute nightmare. Because remember what we said earlier? The raw math of the heat flow explodes.
Right, the infinite roughness.
Yes. They can't just use the standard calculus equations because of that roughness.
So they needed a new tool to pick the lock.
Exactly. And they used a technique that was actually developed by one of the authors, Li Chang-Sai, in a previous paper from 2024. It's called the product method.
The product method. I saw this specific notation when I was reading. It was a Z with a little bullet point and then another Z. What exactly is happening there?
They are essentially defining a brand new way to multiply these highly singular objects.
Okay.
Instead of trying to multiply the jagged noise directly, which we know is impossible, they define an operation that works directly on the axioms of the continuous process itself.
So wait, they bypassed the whole mollification blur thing entirely?
For the core of the proof, yes.
That's it.
They effectively said, let's stop talking about the blurry approximation. Let's build a rigorous language that describes the final ghost object directly.
That feels like a sleight of hand. Like, we can't solve the equation, so we'll just redefine the answer.
It definitely feels like that at first glance. But in advanced probability theory, that's very often how the biggest progress is made.
Really?
Yeah, it's an axiomatic approach. They treat the stochastic heat flow as an object defined purely by mathematical rules. Rules like continuity and the independence of disjoint intervals.
Oh, okay.
By working at that purely abstract level, they could rigorously apply Cyrilson's criterion without constantly getting bogged down in the messy physical approximations.
It's clever. It's kind of like building a cage that exactly fits the dimensions of the beast so you never actually have to fight it directly.
That's exactly it. And that cage is what allows them to confidently claim the ultimate prize here, which is proving that this belongs to the KPZ universality class.
Yes, the KPZ class, the so what factor of the paper.
Exactly.
I've seen KPZ mentioned in articles about everything from bacterial colony growth to the way coffee stains form on a table. Why does this paper matter for all of that?
KPZ stands for Kardar-Parisi-Zhang, and it is huge in physics. It universally describes how interfaces grow in random environments.
Interfaces like borders.
Right. But most of what we definitively know about KPZ is strictly in 1+1 dimensions.
One dimension of time and one dimension of space.
Exactly. Think of the edge of a burning piece of paper. Just a single line moving forward.
But this paper we're talking about is 2D space.
Right. 1+2 dimensions. Think of a 2D surface growing, like a layer of mold spreading across a slice of bread. Or a complex height map changing over time.
Okay.
The math for 2D is exponentially harder than 1D.
Why is that? Is it literally just having more variables to juggle?
It's fundamentally about how the roughness scales. In 1D, the roughness is somewhat manageable.
And in 2D?
In 2D, the singularities, the exact points where the math breaks down, are much, much more severe. It requires a process called renormalization.
Renormalization.
Which is really just a fancy physics way of saying you have to subtract infinities from other infinities just to get a finite readable answer.
And usually when you start subtracting infinities, you completely lose your ability to prove things rigorously right.
Exactly. It gets very hand-wavy. Huh? We often know these limits should exist conceptually, but we absolutely cannot prove their exact properties.
But Gu and Sai did.
Yes. They have firmly planted a flag here. They've provided a completely rigorous analysis of a scaling limit of a critical stochastic PDE in two dimensions.
PDE meaning partial differential equation.
Right, and doing that rigorously is incredibly rare.
So they've unlocked a door that had basically been shut for a while.
And more importantly, they found out who actually lives behind that door. The stochastic heat flow has now officially joined a very, very exclusive club of confirmed black noises.
Who else is even in that club?
It was a very short list.
Mm.
You have the Brownian web, which models an infinite net of coalescing paths.
Okay.
You have critical planar percolation, which mathematically models fluid filtering through a porous stone. And you have the directed landscape.
It's really interesting to me that these all seem to be such fundamental physical models. We're talking about fluids and paths and heat.
It is deeply interesting because it heavily suggests that black noise isn't just some weird mathematical anomaly.
Yeah.
It might actually be the default state of nature when you look closely at these critical phase transition points.
When systems are pushed right to the absolute edge of stability, they turn black.
They become completely independent of their microscopic details. Yes.
Which honestly brings us right back to that philosophical point I've been mulling over since the start of this deep dive.
The independence paradox.
Yeah, I'm still kind of stuck on that. If the macro heat flow completely forgets the micro noise that created it.
Think about what science fundamentally is. Science is the rigorous hunt for causes.
Right.
We see a hurricane, we immediately look for the pressure drop. We see a heat map, we look for the thermal source. We operate on the base assumption that if we just look closely enough, we can always find the underlying why.
But what this paper suggests is that if we look deep enough into a random system, there might just be a brick wall.
Exactly. If nature truly operates at these scaling limits, if the macroscopic world we observe is essentially a black noise version of the microscopic quantum world, then the causal link is mathematically severed.
We're basically studying the smoke, but the fire itself has been permanently erased from the record.
Precisely. We are analyzing objects that have washed away their own history. It implies there is a hard fundamental horizon to how much we can actually reverse engineer the natural world.
Wow.
You can know the heat flow perfectly, and yet mathematically know absolutely nothing about the specific random fluctuations that actually drove it into existence.
That is just terrifyingly cool. It's like Independence Day for physics. The creation simply walks away from the creator and doesn't even look back.
And it suggests that randomness itself has deep, distinct layers.
Right.
There's the simple, tractable randomness of dice and coins. That's white noise. And then there's this deep, structural, impenetrable randomness, black noise, that only emerges from sheer complexity.
Well, I am definitely going to look at the radiator in my living room very differently tonight. It's not just heating the room, it's performing a high-dimensional act of information erasure.
Just do me a favor and don't try to manually calculate the epsilon limit while you're trying to fall asleep.
Deal. I'll leave the math to go and sigh. A huge thank you to our expert for walking us through the void today. This was a tough paper, but I really feel like we got there.
It was an absolute pleasure. Always fun to stare into the abyss for a little while.
And thanks to you for listening to this deep dive. If you enjoyed getting your brain tied in knots by black noise and mathematical paradoxes today, keep following along. We've got a lot more heavy hitters coming up, so something for you to think about. Until then, are we just living in the macroscopic ghosts of quantum physics? We'll see you next time.